You're listening to the Street Smart Wealth Podcast, episode number 66. Welcome to Street Smart Wealth, how to profit in your PJs at home with the best of online, social media strategies, as well as proven offline methods. I'm your host, Jackie Ulmer. On each show, I'll be sharing tips and tools that I've used to create a multi-million dollar income from home with my laptop and internet connection. You'll also hear other top income earner interviews, and I'll be answering your questions. Let me help you be successful in your direct sales and network marketing business. If you don't have Profit in Your PJs, 8 Easy Steps to Create and Build Your Dream Business Online, grab it now over at profitinyourpjsnow.com. In this free guide, I share exactly how I sponsored over 1,700 people into my network marketing business using social media. Okay, on to today's show. Well, welcome to today's show and to what is surely going to be one of the more fun, memorable interviews to date. Today, I'm interviewing Mark Yarnell, a true legend in our profession. I used to listen to Mark's training CDs on my portable CD player at the gym. I'm dating us both here, and I'm sure they were available on cassette before CDs. I've learned a lot from Mark over the years, and because I've listened to him so intently in my earbuds, I really felt like I know him. But when we chatted on the phone, I realized it was the first time we had ever really talked live, and I've still not met him face to face, and I have to tell you, I look forward to that day. He had me cracking up through much of the interview, and it was truly a fantastic hour. I hope you enjoy it too. Now, Mark has very average beginnings, as he'll share. He sure changed all of that with the empire and the success that he created. It just goes to show that anyone really can do it with commitment. Before we get into the interview, here's today's show sponsor. Did you know you can accelerate your success when you feel confident about what to say to break the ice with your prospects, as well as how to answer questions, objections, and follow-up, and of course, how to deal with that sticky question, are you involved in another one of those deals? Learn the success language of Street Smart Scripts over at streetsmartscripts.com.
Well, Mark, I have to tell you, it's absolutely a pleasure to have the opportunity to interview you. You've been one of my heroes and one of my mentors since my early days 20 years ago when I started in network marketing. And so it's a treat and a privilege and an honor to be able to interview you here today. So thanks so much for spending some time with us here.
Oh, you bet, Jackie. I appreciate the opportunity. You know, and when I heard from you, I was excited to do it. So thank you.
Well, absolutely. Well, before we get into some of your background and all the amazing stuff that I know you have to share about our awesome profession, do you have a favorite success quote or some words of wisdom that you'll share with us?
Yeah, I mean, actually, believe it or not, it came from my father at a very early age, and it really has guided me throughout all my career in network marketing. And my dad said that, and he called it out of his arrogance, he called it Yarnell's Law. So I'm not calling it that, but he did. It's the law of 6-3-2. 6 words followed by 3 words followed by 2 words. Do one thing at a time, do it right, finish it. And I have been guided through my whole career by those words of wisdom, and I've found that, you know, having the focus to do one thing at a time and doing it the right way and then not starting something else until I finish that particular objective has served me very well. So that's kind of my favorite motivational, inspirational quote, but it's also kind of a substantive way of going about life, I've found.
Well, I love that, and I love the fact that it came from your father, because I think that's a strong testament to good mentors in our life that guide us through, and it's always fun when it starts close to home.
You bet. Yeah, Dad was a great man.
Well, tell us a little bit of your background before you got started in network marketing. What was kind of your career path?
Well, I started out, I got very fortunate at a young age. A friend of mine whose father had been a car dealer was able to come out of retirement and buy a car dealership right after Bobby and I got out of college. And I was called by him, and he said, we've got a little car dealership over in Oklahoma, and if you'll come over and learn from us, we're going to buy another one, and then we'll own 2 dealerships. And the guy's name was Bob Mayfield. Wonderful guy. I grew up with Bobby in Springfield, Missouri. So I began in the car business, and I learned from some real masters in a small town in Oklahoma. And sure enough, about 2 years into the process, another Chevrolet dealership became available over in a small community, and we bought it. And so I spent my first few years in the car business at a very young age. You know, it was just really the fortuitous intersection of blundering into it at the right time, a young time in my life. But I found that I really wasn't cut out for dog-eat-dog capitalism. You know, it got to the place where I was working 60, 70-hour weeks. And I had originally wanted to be a minister, believe it or not. Growing up, I grew up in a fairly religious family. And after several years in the car business, I decided it just was not a good fit for me. So I applied for seminary in Kansas City, was accepted, went up and went through 2 years of seminary, and then actually wound up, my first church was in Knoxville, Tennessee, and then I was transferred to Kansas City and ultimately Austin, Texas, in the early 80s, which is where I was first introduced to network marketing. At a particularly good, I was very vulnerable at that time in my life because the Texas economy had really cratered, and real estate was horrible. Oil prices were way down. And what happened, Jackie, was a lot of my wealthiest contributors, the big tithers in the church, were going Chapter 11 and bankrupt. And a lot of people don't know this, but a lot of times in a church, there will be 8 or 10 families that are they're actually the biggest supporters of the whole church because when they tithe, it's a pretty substantial amount. So our revenue stream was drying up in the church, and my income had been cut in half when a friend brought me the business opportunity that led me into network marketing. So, you know, they used to have a picture of me in the seminary. I actually worked selling cars while I was going to seminary, and that was back in the years, not, you know, around the Nixon time. Somebody actually put a picture on the wall in seminary: "Would you buy a used God from this man?" And everybody got a big laugh on that. But so it's been an interesting trajectory through life. You know, done a lot of things that are polar opposites, but it's sure been a great life.
Well, that's great. So it was a friend who approached you with the opportunity? Was it someone from your congregation or?
It was. As a matter of fact, it was the guy who was on the steering committee who hired me as their minister who he called me and he said he was feeling kind of guilty because the income had been, you know, so depleted. And I think in an effort to absolve his guilt, he came over to my house one day, and he was all excited. He had a, I remember the only thing he had was a dog-eared Xerox check copy for $112,000. And he was just breathlessly telling me that there was a guy that on the check that was making this much every month. And he wanted to tell me about this thing. He thought it would be good for me, you know, given my income had been depleted so much. And I remember thinking, well, this is the silliest thing I've ever heard in my life. Nobody makes that much a month. But, yeah, to answer your question specifically, it was a friend, a member of the congregation, and he showed up with a big check copy, and that's what got me started. That was back in April of 86.
Wow, that's awesome, April of 86. And, I mean, that's a lot of money now, but that was really a lot of money then.
It really was. It really was. I couldn't conceptualize it. You know, it didn't make sense to me that there were people. When he showed me the check, I thought, man, that guy's got making a good annual income. I mean, that's a good salary. I mean, $112,000 in a year is pretty darn good because I'd never made that. And when he told me it was a monthly check, it was a little bit more than I could even handle. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it was a real conscious shock to me to know that there were people making that much a month. And frankly, I started out just to prove that he couldn't be telling me the truth. I mean, I started by doing a bunch of research, actually.
So you didn't jump in right away?
Well, yeah, I did, but it right away is relative. I jumped in 2 days later because the way I went about it, Jackie, is I called, you know, I knew Bill pretty well, and I figured maybe he was just being nice to me, and he'd been lured into some kind of investment scam, but I couldn't shut him up. He was so excited. So once he left, I called a good friend of mine who was my banker, and he's a real conservative accountant type guy. And I gave him the name of the bank that the check had been drawn on and the guy's name who supposedly made it, and I told him he was making that monthly. And my banker kind of laughed and said, well, you know, I'll check it out, get back to you. And I figured that'd be the end of it. But that afternoon, Mike called me back, the banker, and he said not only was the check good, but there were other people making more than that in this little upstart company called New Skin. And he said something that changed my whole world. This is really what sent me down the path of network marketing. He said, "Yarnell, if I were you, I'd roll the dice on this one because it looks like one of those companies modeled after Avon, which means if you get in at the, and here's the way he put it, if you get in at the very top of the tree, you're rich." And he said, "Trust me, my crazy aunt's been in Avon forever, and she makes 10 times what I do over here at the bank." So he said, "Roll the dice because there's no real capital risk. You're not losing any money. And the upside potential could easily be millions and millions of dollars." So, you know, when a conservative friend of mine who's my own personal banker tells me to jump into something, I'm doing it. And then that, once I talked to him about it, that was it. Boom, I was in.
I love it. So, that's awesome. So what did you do then to get started? Did you have systems and tools that you used? I know you mentioned the, you know, dog-eared Xerox copy of a check and stuff. How did you get your business started, and what tools did you use?
Well, I called a guy up in New York who was on the check, the guy that was supposedly making all this money, a guy's named Richard Call. What a great mentor he was. And he agreed to help me. He agreed to work with me. I was down six levels beneath him, it turned out, in this company. And he said, "I'll teach you if you'll just keep your mouth shut and do what I tell you," which is what I needed. I needed a mentor who was tough with me. I mean, I didn't know anything. I was going broke, and he's making that much money. I figure it's a no-brainer. I'll listen to this guy. And so basically his guidance to me was, "We are carrier pigeons." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, our job is to spread information, you know, and you can't say the wrong thing to the right person. So your objective is to go out and talk to 30 people a day, 5 days a week, and at the end of the year you'll be making more money than you can spend." And I said, "Well, what do you mean, 30 people? He said, "Well, you don't have to talk to them for more than a minute or two. All you want to do is see if you can find people who want to make $30,000 to $50,000 a month and retire in 3 or 4 years. And so he said, "I want you to pick areas. First, go after all your friends." And I said, "Well, I can't do that because they're all in the church, and I'm not going to use the pulpit as a recruiting tool. It just seems like a conflict of interest." He said, "Well, get the people first who aren't in your church that you like, that you're friends with, because you want everybody to have a shot at this. And then we're going to pick some locations in Austin where you live, and all you're going to do is go out and hand out." He had a little cassettes back in the days where, you know, they had cassettes and VHSs and all that. He said, "All you're going to do is hand out some information, and some people are going to do it and some people aren't, and that's just no big deal." So the way I got started was, I was told, it's a numbers game, you're a carrier pigeon, you can't say the wrong thing to the right person, and just go out and talk to a whole bunch of people. And the smarter they are, the quicker they'll get involved. So that's all I did. And I figured, okay, I promised him I'd do whatever he said. And so I did that. And I'll tell you what I've learned that's really fascinating over the years, Jackie, is when people are faced with change or uncertainty, it's always funny to observe. Entrepreneurs will hit the gas, and salaried worker bee types will hit the brakes. So what I kind of learned in going and talking to all these people, and I've learned over the years to prove it subsequently, is that, you know, I've been in the profession a long time, and if success were easy, it'd be more common. You and I both know that. But the truth is, it isn't. The truth is, it's a difficult business regardless of what sector of capitalism you get into. And that's why real success is so rare. Very few people are willing to make the necessary sacrifices in order to earn $100,000 a month. Even though most people have the talent, and I can easily teach them the skills. So entrepreneurs thrive on chaos and uncertainty, and employee types thrive on predictability and routine. So what I'm looking for when I'm out talking to people, and this is what I did the first year, I'm looking for people who step on the gas the minute they see the opportunity, not the people who step on the brake or ask me, "How can I do this without effort, you know, without sacrifice?" And I just discovered early on I could tell real quick who was in the right time in their life by whether they stepped on the gas or they stepped on the brake. So I'm just looking for a handful of people who, when I show them what the potential is and I talk to them about that kind of big money and free time, they're interested. In fact, they step on the gas. "What do you got? What do you got?" You know, one of those things. So that's all I did. You know, I didn't have any tools. I mean, basically it was just talk to people, find people who were in the right time in their life and who were willing to rise to their full potential. That's all I did.
When you mentioned the word sacrifice, which I like that, say more about what you mean by sacrifice and what it is that people are not willing to sacrifice. Is that ego that they're not willing to sacrifice? Is it fear? Is it laziness? What does all that come down to?
Well, I think there are a number of sacrifices I'm referring to. Of course, not the least of which is the time sacrifice. We're all granted the same amount of time to work. So if you're going to do a business, you're going to have to sacrifice certain hours. You could be doing something else in order to do the business you're doing. You know, so you're making a sacrifice of time. But I think the real sacrifice is you're willing to trade impression management, which is stupid anyway and impossible to generate. You're trading impression management for the right to provide your family with the lifestyle they deserve. Now, let me see what I mean by that. It's really simple to explain. I talk to people all the time whose lives don't work. You know, they're putting in 60-hour weeks at a job they hate with a boss or a group of board of directors that they think are stupid. They're stressed out. Their kids are on drugs. They haven't been in a meaningful vacation in 10 years. They haven't had sex with their wife for 5. You know, and so they're sitting there. Their life doesn't work. And I come into their life, and I start talking to them about how they can turn that around and get off the 40-year plan, which I'll be apt to explain to you if you want to know. But I say, I can get you off the 40-year plan, put you on the 4-year plan. Your life's not working. I can show you how to do it. Well, what is it? And then I tell them a little bit about it. And it's amazing the number of people whose lives are horrible by their own admission, their own description, who will not do what I'm doing because they want to be able to manage the impressions that other people have of them in the community. Heck with their family. You know, heck with the vacations, heck with the fun, the joy, the quality of life that we can all have. No, 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 no. They'd rather stay in a salaried position they hate as long as all their friends think they're a big professional business person or doctor or dentist or whatever. So the big sacrifice people have got to be willing to make is they've got to stop playing childish teenager arrested development games of personality and impression management and start focusing on what will provide their family the best standard of living. Because one thing I've learned, the more money you make, the more stature you've got in the community. But a lot of people don't want to do our industry just because they're so afraid what people think of them. Oh, my God, this is one of those pyramid deals. Duh. Yeah, it's a pyramid. Everything's a pyramid. Flip over a dollar bill, there's a pyramid on the back of it. Every structure is shaped like a pyramid. You don't mean Ponzi scheme, do you? Those are illegal. But the people that most people in a professional position, now I don't care what it is, are unwilling to sacrifice pretense for productivity. And so they stay in a meaningless dead-end life because they're so afraid what other people, they want to manage everybody's impression of them. Well, I got news for those people. When people put their head down on their pillow at night, they're only thinking of numero uno, and it ain't you. You may be the subject at a church function or a cocktail party because they don't have anything better to talk about. Well, did you hear about Yarnell? He's in one of those pyramids. But the truth is they don't really care about you. They get to choose to make any impression, form any impression they want about you. So since you can't really manage people's impressions anyway, it seems like kind of a stupid way to go about life, especially if your life stinks. So my goal is to find people who finally had enough impressing people with all their fancy debt and their Beamers and their Mercedes and, you know, their hot tubs and their airplanes. Their lives don't work. They haven't been to a kid's recital or soccer game in ever. Their spouses are about ready to leave them. Their life stinks, right? And I'm looking for those people who say, okay, I've played by all the rules, and everybody's impressed that I am a dentist, or I'm president of the bank, or I'm a doctor, or I run this little corporation, or I, you know. But I'm tired of that. I don't care what people think of me. I'm going to rise to my full potential, and I'm going to explore every option out there. Those are the people I'm looking for who will sacrifice their absurd obsession on impressing others for the money and time freedom that their family deserves. Does that make sense?
Makes total sense. I love the way you put that. And I had never heard the term impression management, but I love that.
Oh, well, thank you.
Sums it up so well. Beautiful. Had you heard of network marketing before? Had you ever been approached?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, first thing I asked Bill, is this like Amway? Yeah, that back in the early days, that was the big objection. Now I look back on it, I don't know why. I mean, Amway did over $10 billion last year. Amway's a great company. But back then, everybody'd say, your primary, remember what I said, the difference between the entrepreneur and the employee is. The entrepreneur steps on the gas. The employee type steps on the brake. And the first brake that people come up with is they step on that brake pedal that says pyramid scheme, because that's just a stereotypical red flag. It's like Amway. It can't be good. Only people who get into the top three make all the big money. So essentially, I'm looking for people who they don't use stereotypical objections and step on the brake the minute I open an opportunity to them. But I was guilty of it. I mean, I evaluated everything based on, is this like Amway? Why? Did I know anything bad about Amway? No. That's just one of the breaks that my daddy taught me. So if anybody approached me with a deal, all I had to do was say, oh, no, no, is this like Amway? I wouldn't do Amway. I didn't know why I was saying that, but it was a good way to avoid having to go to a person's house and watch them draw circles on a board. So, I'd heard of network marketing, and it was like if I ever heard of any network marketing company, I would hold up a cross or a bag of garlic like I was dealing with a vampire. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. But see, remember what I said earlier about being in the right time in your life? I'm sitting there broke. Well, when he came to me, I wasn't quite as interested in putting on the brakes because I didn't have any other options at the time. So instead of worrying about all the stereotypical red flags we all and the stupid objections people put up for industry, I said, okay. I said, it's like Amway. He said, yeah, I think so. I said, well, let me show it to me. But then what confirmed that it was the right decision was when the banker said, oh, it's like Avon. You get in at the top of the tree, you make all the money. So, I knew what it was, A. B, I was always against it. C, I didn't know why I was against it. But D, when my life wasn't working and it was a way to make money, all of a sudden I was willing to look at it. So I was in the right time in my life is what I'm saying.
How much would you say the credibility of the person who brought it to you weighed in on your openness?
It wasn't so much credibility. Bill was a friend. And frankly, his position in life was on the socioeconomic scale far below mine. But I liked him. He was a friend. I liked him. So the real impression to me, anybody can get anybody. You know, people worry about bringing in big players. They are, I'm not credible enough. Of course you are. You're just a messenger. In network marketing, we're just carrier pigeons. We're just giving information to people, and we're looking for people who will step on the gas. And so Bill didn't have a whole lot of credibility or experience. In fact, he'd only been in the deal one day, and he wasn't a particularly bright businessman, but I liked him. Now, what closed me to think about it even more closely was there was a guy more credible than me, and that was my banker. And when I called Mike, and Mike told me that his aunt was in Avon making 10 times what he was making as a banker, I thought, well, that's a no-brainer. I believe I'll try that. My own banker's admitting his old aunt's crazy aunt's making more than him. So I was approached by somebody completely below me in socioeconomic terms, but that I liked. And then the potential was confirmed by somebody I did respect a lot. But anybody can recruit anybody, Jackie. It's got nothing to do with credibility.
I like that. Bill sponsored up.
Oh, big time. And because we were friends. See, friends will listen to friends.
Right.
That's what I always tell people. You know, I don't even recruit people anymore if they won't build a list of friends. And I've heard all the excuses. Well, you know, I'm not going to burn my friends anymore. Well, you're not burning them. If you get, you know, people need to understand you're doing people the biggest favor of their life. So if somebody tells me they will not talk to people they know, I don't even sponsor them. I'm through. That's it. Done deal. Because I know they're probably not going to make it. Now, that seems pretty severe. And I'll admit I've got an advantage in that I've made enough money I can be a little more picky than the average person. But I'm not going to bring people into the business who refuse to do what I teach them. And the first step is to be willing to give your friends and the people you love an opportunity to rise to their full potential.
Well, what backs that up, you ask any person who's been successful in this profession and they'll tell you they absolutely, you know, appreciate so much the person who brought it to them, and it's typically a friend.
Absolutely. That's the way to do the business. It's a relationship marketing business. This is not a business about closing sales. this is a business about opening relationships. There's a big difference.
Well, paint a picture for us then of how your journey proceeded then. Like how long did it take you till you made the type of income you were looking for, and then how many people did you sponsor, would you say, personally to get to that point?
Well, what's interesting is I sponsored a lot of people. You know, I don't jump around much. I've been in three companies for 28 years, and New Skin, everybody knows I was in New Skin International, which to this day I love. You know, they gave me the perfect vehicle. And although I sold my downline in the 90s to a Crossline person, and I'm still very close friends with all those people, and I still think it's an unbelievably good company. But in New Skin, over a 12-year period, I sponsored over 350 people, which sounds like a lot. It's not if you break it down in 12 years. Here's what's interesting. Three people resulted in all of my money, a hit-and-run detective, a maid, and a high school teacher. Everybody else quit or failed or didn't do anything. So it wasn't so much that the number, I guess you could say I wasted my time on the last 250 people because I found my best three in the first 100, right? And those three people led to all my money. And so, I mean, at the end, I actually worked real, real hard. I think of it as a four-year plan. I know, you know, people get in these bottle rocket deals where they can get to big money real fast and it's all exciting, and I'm happy for them. I'm just more interested in telling a person what my experience is. My experience is you can get off the 40-year plan and on the 4-year plan, but it's not a 4-week plan. You know, it's not a 4-month plan. Yes, I can get you to earning more in a month than your surgeon friend earns in a year, but it might take you 48 months. But, hey, your surgeon's on the 40-year plan. And the 40-year plan is the biggest delusion in North America. 40-year plan is a scam. Talk about a pyramid scheme. The 40-year plan is a complete and total farce. And I am just can't believe people are still on the 40-year plan. You know what I mean by the 40-year plan?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
But I do, but it would be great. Go ahead and explain it.
Well, what's scary about it is, you know, everybody starts at age 25 with a pretty good sense of direction. But at age 65, out of every 100 Americans, 31 are dead, 68 are broke, one's wealthy. You know, we see this in every election cycle, especially recently. The 1% and the 99%. Well, after 40 years from 25 to age 65, which, by the way, is that magic golden year beginning, bull. So you're going to work for 40 years. And of every 100 Americans, 31 are dead, 68 are broke, one's rich. Well, those aren't real good. Now, some would argue, well, Yarnell, you're crazy. Actually, there are four or five others that have made a good living. It's not just all sick. Well, that's true, but they're still living on moderately, less than they made their last year. I'm not saying they're all, you know, on eating cold French fries out of trash cans. What I'm saying is, 1% of the people are rich enough to live however they want. Here's what bothers me about the golden years. The reason people need to get into network marketing fast and work hard for 4 years is they want their best years to be in the middle, not the end. I mean, you know, if you look at the numbers, they're very clear. By age 65, everybody is on an average of 7.2 pharmaceutical drugs. Okay, 65% of all 65 years and older can't run up two flights of stairs without gasping or having pain, and 17% are on oxygen full time. You know, I don't know where these magic 65 years are coming into people's lives with golden joy and fun. That's all garbage. From 65 on, it's a crapshoot. So what I say to people is put in a good hard 4 years in network marketing. Pick a great company. Make sure you love the products or serve whatever you're selling. Make sure you got to get an upline. Go to work harder than you've ever worked in your life for 4 years, and then enjoy the golden years before the crap years get here. And they're coming. They're coming. So, you know, that's just the 4-year plan is a complete farce, complete and total farce. I did it in 4 years. I got to the big, big, big money in 4 years. But there were benchmarks along the way, Jackie. I mean, you know, I was making $30,000 a month inside of a year. And back in 86, that was still big money. Well, I mean, still pretty good living.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is.
So that's how I did.
Was it all smooth sailing, or did you have some challenges along the way?
No, there was never any smooth sailing. It was all chaos and nightmares and challenges. I can remember I'd called Richard at least once a week, ready to quit. Oh, no, it was hell on earth. And that's what I mean by the sacrifices, okay? You know, I was willing to make those sacrifices and keep plowing the ground. I knew New Skin's products were great. I loved the owners. I thought they were ethical. And my upline was great. And I'd made a lot of friends. Now, I wasn't making any money. And there was always something popping up that was rotten, in my opinion. And I was always getting deflected. And I'd call Richard with some whining, you know, there was always something I was mad about. And I'd call Richard, and he'd say, hey, I've got an idea. Well, I'll give you a good example. I got so mad when New Skin came out with their first magazine, because I'm a writer, and so grammar, English are my tools. I love grammar and punctuation and sentence construction and syntax and all that. So here they send out their first magazine, and I find 5 typos on the front page. I was livid. How embarrassed is this? This is horrible. What are my friends going to think? I called Richard, madder than a wet hornet, about these typos. Richard said, oh, no problem. Listen, here's what I want you to do. Quit right now and come back in 5 years. There will be no typos. In 5 years, everything will be great. Smooth sailing, everything. Just quit now. Come back in 5 years because I know you can't handle the typos. And then he hung up on me. I was always having stuff that rankled me, bothered me. This downline was stealing this person. This upline was lying to this person. This person was quitting and going to another company that was 10 times better than New Skin. That's how I lost the mayor of Austin, Texas. He got in USA Vitamins. And they had the president of the AMA and Chris Everett Lloyd and Steve Garvey and all these athletes and the head of Harvard Medical School on their video. It was the greatest nutritional supplement program in the history of planet Earth. And they had the best video I've ever seen in my life. I lost probably 30 people to USA Vitamins, including the mayor of Austin, Texas. So I called Richard just whining and moaning. And he said, hey, quit worrying about it. That company will be out of business in 6 months. It's a flim-flam. It's crap. Well, I didn't believe him. I thought I was ruined. It was chaos for 6 months. Just almost to the day, 6 months later, they're put out of business by the government as a flim-flam. So it seemed like it didn't really matter how much chaos, how many problems, what horrible things were next to agitate me. I just hung in. I did one thing at a time. I did it right, and I finished it. It was the same. You know, I just hung in there. But I'm going to tell you right now, there was more chaos than fun in the first 4 years.
What made it worth it to you?
Well, I'll tell you what made it worth it to me. That's what I thrive on.
Mm.
I like challenge. You know, I like, now you don't know it when you're in the middle of it. It's not until you start making a couple $100,000 a month or $150,000 a month, and every month, like clockwork, FedEx rings the doorbell, and you get another big check, and you've got $1.4 million in your checking account, and you have no worries. Then it's when it dawns on you, oh, my God, this isn't pleasurable. You know, I have no real satisfaction here. And, you know, the little voice says, but, Mark, you got that new airplane. Yeah. But it costs $500 to hangar it, and I don't have time to fly it that often. And even if I do, I'm bored with it because I've flown it a bunch the last month. In other words, what I'm saying is, it is the chaos of the build. It's you know, they say, you know, the pioneers by the arrows in their back. I love the arrows. I love the challenges. I just don't get satisfied, you know, making all the big money and then not having anything productive to do. So it turns out for me, immediate gratification is too slow. You know, everybody wants immediate gratification. I don't want immediate gratification. It's too slow. I want process gratification. In other words, I want to enjoy the process, not the immediacy of the rewards that are just going to bore me. And that's hard to explain to people when they're new to the business because they think, yeah, Yarnell, I'd love to have your problem for about a month. Too much money, too much free time. That's crap. I could handle it. oh, really? Then how come 80% of the people who win lotteries are either overweight or dead in 8 years? You know, come on. It's the fun thing about network marketing, in my opinion, is it actually is a challenge, and you're in control of your own destiny, and you're part of a volunteer army, and nobody can stop you if you want to make $1 million a month. Nobody can stop you. So who cares about the challenges? I love the process. That's really how I feel about it. I love this business. I told a guy the other day, he said, I can't believe you're doing this at your age. Well, why wouldn't I? I want to die. I want my face to smack on my desk in the middle of a three-way call. I want to be talking to a prospect, and everybody hears, boom, and the rumor gets out. Geez, you're not going to believe it. I was on a three-way with Yarnell with a doctor up in Muskegon, Michigan, and he died. That's how I want to go out. I want to go out talking to a prospect. Now, if that sounds crazy, I'm serious about that. I love this business.
Well, that's perfect. And it's funny that you bring that up because I remember when I was in the struggling days and, you know, banging my head on the wall, and I would hear top leaders say, you know, enjoy the journey. And I would think, oh, what is to enjoy about the journey? You've got to be kidding me. Just get me there already. And, you know, it literally was the day that I just stopped and relaxed and just decided to have fun with my business. That is truly the day that everything changed. It really is.
And I know you've had fun with it. And you're still having fun with it by helping other people. That's great.
Yeah. So how do you go about getting someone new started? Do you use the same technique that Richard used with you, saying, you know, I'll mentor you if you do what I say? Tell us a little bit about how you launch someone getting started in their business.
Well, my goal is to avoid them getting stuck getting started. So rather than a real excessive diatribe of, you know, these are your 12 principles you need to understand, these are the 6 steps under each. Basically what I do is I say, we're going to start with your top 40. So I want you to get together your top 40 people, and I want you to, and I'm going to teach you what to say to them. And really all we say to people is, I've gotten in a business, the craziest thing I've ever seen. I'm losing sleep. I think we're rich. It's low-hanging fruit. You're not going to believe. I've partnered with this crazy guy who wrote a best-selling book in the industry. Look, I just want to give you some information so you can look at this, and if you like what you see, I'm going to put you on the phone with my partner. Now, here's the key, in my opinion. The real advantage in network marketing, beyond the vehicle's critical, but the real advantage is having an upline who's good and who's accessible. So I'm telling young people all the time that call me and they're in some deal and they can't get going and they've read my book and they just can't. And I say, well, track upline, do you find somebody making $100,000 a month? Because there's somebody above you somewhere who knows how to do the business. I don't know how to do your business. I'm not in your company. But I just tell my people, I want you're a carrier pigeon. You're getting information to people. The more information you get out to the more people, and the more people you get to me for a three-way call where I can validate you and answer their questions, the more money you're going to make. My process is real simple. It's all basically go to your top 40 first. Then we're going to go to your second degree of separation, which I call your classmates. And, you know, one of the best advice I can give anybody listening to this call, this time we're spending together now, Jackie, $1 million idea, is everybody went to high school. And everybody, most people on that ever, or, you know, most people graduated from high school, okay? And even if they didn't, they went to some high school. Most people had an average class of anywhere from 1 to 300 people. That means 10 years after they graduated from high school, in my case, I graduated from Glendale High School in Springfield, Missouri, and we had 300 in our class. So that meant for 10 years after I graduated, for the next 10 years, 3,000 people went through that school. All you got to do is find out who plans the reunions, and the longer you've been out of high school, the better. Get the list of and phone numbers. Here's the most important thing, phone numbers of those people from the person who plans the conventions, and go after those 3,000 people or 400 people that were in your graduate. target your high school people. Because if I call you, Jackie, and I say, hey, it's Mark Yarnell, graduated from Glendale High School. How you been? Boom, instant rapport. I mean, instant rapport. You're not going to say to me, how'd you get my name? Don't you know I'm on a no-call list? How dare you call? You're going to say, great, Mark, I got out of Glendale too. What have you been up to? Instant rapport. See, what I've just done is I've taken a cold market person and turned them into a warm market lead by defining our affinity. Everybody's got their own high school class, and it is a captive, closed market that nobody else but you can work. So that then we go after the 400 that are we call the classmates. After that, it's just a process of going after people, both in person and on the phone and on the internet, who have something in common with you dramatically. In other words, I want people that have an affinity with me, where if I identify to them that I'm a paraglide pilot and I know they're a paraglide pilot, it's instant rapport. I've converted them into a warm market lead immediately when I define our commonality. We're brother. We're kindred spirits. We both paraglide. Well, there's nobody that doesn't have a group of 50,000 people that they can call on that's their own private group. I don't care if they're private pilots, yachtsmen, soccer mothers, coaches of Little League, mountain climbers, paragliders. You give me 5 minutes with any man or woman in North America, and I'll identify a market, a warm market of 50,000 people unique to them. And then, guys, all you got to do is call them. Identify your commonalities and tell them about your business and show them something, give them something to go look at. It's that simple.
Simple enough. What would you say are the best things that you did to succeed?
The best things that I did? Certainly it was I refused to ever end the day without hitting a quota of 30 people. I knew that if I talked, Richard had told me if I talked to 30 people in a 20-day month, that's 600 people, and if 95% of them don't do anything, if I keep that up for a year, I'm going to get to 100,000 a month. Well, I couldn't get that out of my brain. I kept thinking about it. Wow, that's unbelievable. Well, surely I can talk to 30 people. So all I did was talk to the greatest thing I did was I always made sure the day involved communicating with 30 prospects about my business opportunity. Now, I could have done it with 20 or 10. I always tell young people, pick a number. You know, but you got to pick one of these three. Either you're going to talk to 10 people a day, 20 people a day, or 30 people a day. And if you're unwilling to do that, you shouldn't even get in this business. Because you've got to talk to a lot of people to find the entrepreneurs who step on the gas. Most people step on the brake. The minute you approach them with your opportunity, they'll step on the brake. So the greatest thing I did was I set a number and I stuck with it. And nobody could deter me from my intended objective. Because by golly, if Richard Call can make $100,000 a month, so can Mark Yarnell. And it turned out right. You know, it turned out I could make a lot more than that. But I never slowed down. If I can just get one idea across to people that's the multi-million-dollar idea, it's pick a number, 10, 20, or 30, and talk to that number of people every day. Why? Because we're only paid to do two things. And this is a real – I don't mean to kickstart my mouth here, but this is an important point. There are too many amateurs in network marketing. This is a profession. And the thing is, I'm only paid to do two things. Now, everybody thinks I'm being disparaging when I say, oh, most people are just amateurs. I don't mean it in a disparaging way. I'm telling you, the last year that Tiger Woods was an amateur, he didn't make any money. The first year he turned pro, he made $18 million. What's the difference? He turned pro. Now, in network marketing, we are only paid, and by the way, the only difference between a professional and an amateur isn't paid to do the same thing a professional is. So if you're going to be a professional networker, you got to do what you're paid to do. The only thing I'm paid to do is recruit and retail. So if I'm doing anything else, I'm an amateur. If I'm playing Air Wings on my iPad, I'm an amateur. If I'm watching Oprah, I'm an iPad. I'm an amateur. If I'm walking the dog, I'm an amateur. If I'm griping to my downline or upline, I'm an amateur. If I'm looking at somebody else's comp plan, I'm an amateur. In other words, what I learned early on is if I wanted to make the big money, I had to turn pro. And that meant I had to do what the company was willing to pay me for. Well, they were only willing to pay me to do that, recruit and retail. So that's been my focus, recruit, retail, you know, because that's all I'm getting paid to do. So I'm not going to waste my time whining about problems on the phone. That's too amateur. So I just tell people, hey, be turn pro for at least an hour, 2 or 3 hours a day, turn pro. Talk to new people about your opportunity and about your product. And that's my best advice.
That's fantastic. What mistakes would you say that you made?
Oh, my God. I see by my watch we're running out of time, so it's probably not a can of worms you want to open. If we had another 3 hours, I made so many mistakes. For starters, I was in the habit early on of believing it was my job to talk people into doing the business. And I can't tell you the number of times, you know, what I've learned is I really would prefer to build a downline as opposed to a daycare. And I went through lots of periods of times where, you know, when you're a minister, you've got what we call the Messiah complex. You think you can fix everybody. You're really sick as a Messiah complex compulsive if you go into the ministry because you're getting paid to love people. You think you can fix anything. So I'll admit to you right up front, I've always had this Messiah complex. So when I first got in the business, the biggest mistake I made, I was going to fix everybody. First thing I was going to do was I was going to fix them by getting them out of their god-awful lifestyle. And the next thing I was going to do, I was going to fix them by getting them into new skin and making them rich. And I saw what potential they had, and I was going to help them all. And what I discovered is I couldn't motivate anybody. I tried, and I'm pretty good, but I never could drag anybody across the finish line. So the first big mistake I made is I had to realize that I couldn't fix everybody and that everybody wasn't cut out. Most people are not cognitively hardwired to be entrepreneurs. The second big mistake I made was the more money I made, the more I became convinced I was general manager of the universe. And so on regular occasions, I'd have to be reminded to resign as general manager of the universe because, you know, when you're young and you make too much money, you tend to take yourself a little more seriously than you should. And so, you know, I went through these phases. The product knowledge phase was real important to me. I'm making so much money, I've got to become an expert on the products. So I spent countless hours learning the hard science behind the technology of this product from Cuomo, Italy, and Krinos Labs, and I would dazzle audiences from coast to coast with my genius, my wisdom of molecular structures and how the papilla of the hair follicle can be vasodilated at the capillary level to perfection. Da, 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 da. And I'd have people come up to me from the audience, dermatologists, say, I have no idea what you were talking about. I'm a doctor. So the big mistake I made was the more money I made, the smarter I thought I was. And we see this a lot in network marketing where people will make a big bunch of money and they think that that means they can run their name up a flag on and own their own company. I can't tell you the number of people, including me, who have believed we were so smart that we could start our own company. Well, there's nothing to that. The hard thing's building the downline. Watch my smoke. I'll start my own company. And I see leader after leader after leader in bottle rocket companies where they start a company and they bring on a few people because they got a big name, but they have no clue how to really run a deal. They've never managed a big company. And in a relatively short time, they make a mistake and they're put out of business or they sell out or they go public, and then they're placing the shareholders instead of the distributors and changing the comp plan. So the biggest mistake was, first of all, I was going to fix everybody, and I never fixed one person. And then secondly, I decided I was smarter than everybody, and I wasn't. And then I was going to control my whole downline. If I found somebody who wasn't duplicating the great Mark Yarnell, my God, I was on the phone with them. What's the matter with you? Until a couple of them pointed out they were making more than I was doing what I didn't do. And I realized, you know, you take yourself too seriously, and that ego gets in the way, especially when you're young, you make the big money. And then I thought I could be happy doing nothing. So I took a year off and went to Switzerland, Stade, Switzerland. And that almost killed me. So I made all kinds of mistakes, talked to the wrong people, tried to save the wrong people, tried to persuade the right people because I thought they were great and they didn't really want to do it, but I talked them into it. Oh, another big mistake, don't become a banker. One of the things I learned is I when somebody says, hey, if you buy me a kit, watch my smoke. Well, I've put $17,000 into kits over the years for other people. Not one of them's ever made it, and not one of them's ever paid me back. So what I say to people now when they say, buy me a kit and I'll make you rich, I say, hey, I made my banker a promise. I won't loan money if he won't do MLM. So I'm not giving you a kit. The biggest mistake I was making early on is I had so much money, I just buy somebody a kit. Well, they didn't have any skin in the game. They didn't have a vested interest in it. So sure, they'll sign up as long as I buy the kit. Then they didn't do anything. So that was the third big mistake that I made. Oh, I could go on and on, Jackie. Really, I made a lot of mistakes.
Well, those are brilliant. I think most of us have made them, and it definitely drives the point home. So there you go. If you had to name three primary skills that you feel like a person needs to develop, and I say develop because most of us aren't born with them, that a person needs to develop, skills to develop in order to be successful, what would those three be?
They'd be listen, read, and communicate effectively. So well, the first thing I do when I meet a new person, whether I'm doing a three-way call for one of my downline or I'm doing a call myself, is the very first thing I want to know is, tell me about you. What have you been up to? I'm interested in you. I mean, I'm going to tell you about me in a minute and what we're going to talk about in our business. I'm really interested in you. Tell me about yourself. And I really am. I'm not doing that to make them feel good. I'm doing it because I want to know who these people are. And I'm going to pick up clues about their self-esteem, about whether they're entrepreneur. I'm going to learn a lot about people in just a little five-minute dialogue. And so the first thing is learn to listen. It's real easy if you're like me to be too big a talker. That's another mistake that I tend to make a lot too, still do, and I try to catch myself, but I just can't. You know, it's like I kickstart my mouth like a Harley Davidson. You know, I get all cranked up and I start talking and I don't listen. So I've got to be cognizant of what I'm doing or I'll make the same mistake all over and over. Learn to listen to people. Find out their story. They want to tell their story. You're going to have plenty of time to tell yours. And as you listen to their background, you'll pick up a lot of wonderful, wonderful facts. Read. You know, I get up every morning at 5 a.m., and I've done this now for 30 years. 30 years. I've got a library. I'm not bragging. I mean, but I've got 6,000 books. People come into my house, they say my library is books from floor to ceiling. And I've read most of them because I love reading. So every morning from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. when everybody else is, you know, not bugging me again, I've got my ringer turned down on the phone, I read. If somebody calls me and says, hey, what book should I read? I can give them so many books, it will choke a horse. And I'm talking the latest, greatest books written by the best people, books that are life transformative. And every time I read a book, and I do this every day, I learn something. And I learn something from an expert in another field who's dedicated his or her life to exploring one narrow domain. So if I go get the best sellers in every domain, you know, business, science, technology, philosophy, psychology, et cetera, I'm going to be way ahead of the game. The average American reads one book a year, and it's fiction. So learn to listen, learn to read and improve your brain, and then practice communicating effectively, both in the written and the spoken word. Nothing's worse, and I know, Jackie, you're a technology expert, and I think you're very, very special at what you do. And, you know, Valerie and I have looked at your stuff and really impressed with it. One of the things I've noticed is your attention to detail. People need to understand that they are judged by their language, both written and oral. Don't let up on your ability to improve as a communicator. That will serve you well, both in the written and spoken word. And it doesn't matter how people abbreviate things online and how cutesy they get. If you're going to send somebody any kind of information of any kind, whether it's a text message or a Facebook, anything, make it good grammar, check it over, because that is a reflection of who you are. And the more you improve your communication skills, the more effective you'll be at guiding a group of people in network marketing. So those are the three things that are real, real important to me.
I like those. And speaking of reading, what would be a book, if you were to recommend one book to the listeners, what book would that be?
Well, in network marketing, I would recommend the old standard A.L. Williams book, All You Can Do Is All You Can Do, But All You Can Do Is Enough. All You Can Do is a book that's so dog-eared here. I mean, I've written 11 books, and I recommend his book ahead of mine. People say, well, wouldn't you rather sell your – no, his is better. You know, it's one I read. All You Can Do is All You Can Do. I think it is absolutely fabulous. I love the book by Michael LaGault. It's fairly new, called Think. And I don't know, if I were going to recommend one book to everybody and say, you know, don't go through life without reading this one, it would probably be The Great Turning by David Corton. Just The Great Turning by David Corton. And I think Corton spells his name with a K. K-O-R-T-E-N or K-O-R-T-I-N. The Great Turning is a very life-transformative book. If you're willing to laugh at yourself and take yourself lightly, another great book is Kaplan's book, Bozo Sapiens. I got a big kick out of Bozo Sapiens by Ellen Kaplan, K-A-P-L-A-N, I believe. Oh. That is absolutely fabulous, fabulous book. So I mean, I've got so many great books that I love.
Yeah, I can tell you do, 6,000 or so.
Yeah, 6,000.
What do you love most about our profession?
The fact that the only way you can win is by elevating others. You know, instead of getting in at the very bottom and trying to crawl your way through some artificial bureaucratic nightmare to the top and using all your skills as a negotiator and a backstabber, whatever you've got to do to get to the top, you start at the top of your own group and you win by filling in the bottom. And to me, it's just a reversal on the whole concept of Economics 101. So we're probably the only profession where everybody starts at the very top and wins by elevating other people. And I just think that's marvelous. I think it's a great business model. Don't you? I mean, I love it.
I love it, too, and I love that. I love that that analogy of it. That's perfect. All right, final question for you. If you are just starting today with the knowledge that you have, that you've gleaned over the last almost 30 years, I'd say, in this profession, what would you do to build your business? How would you get off to a rocket start?
Same thing. The same thing I've done three times. I would simply make a list of my top 40, and I'd call them and say, get over to my house as quick as you can. Bring your credit card. I have found the mother load. And by the way, you may need to buy some Unisom and a box of Depends. Because when you see what I've got, you're not going to be able to stand it. You probably are going to need adult diapers and sleeping medication. But get over here Thursday night and bring your Visa. That's exactly what I do. Last time I did that, I had 14 people in my living room, signed up 12 of them, and two of them are now still making me the most money of anybody in the company. First meeting. So that's the first thing. I went after last time everybody I knew. Then I expanded my circle to paragliders, but I'm also I'm very conscious of the fact that if I'm out talking to people, I can get almost anybody interested. I've just got to determine if they're in the right time in their life, because I go about it in a different way than the average person. I've learned how to nullify all the objections right up front. So, for example, Jackie, what I'm saying is, going about it now, what I love to do is go out in public and talk to people. Because my approach, my whole goal is to plant seeds that are going to give you trouble. They're going to germinate later and give you trouble. I'm planting seeds. So if I run into you, Jackie, no matter where we are in an event, we're talking, I'm going to ask you what you do, and you're going to tell me. And then you're going to ask me what I do to be polite, and I'm going to say, well, I flip pyramids. You say, what? Yeah, I flip pyramids. What do you mean? Well, have you ever heard of flipping real estate, flipping houses? Well, yeah. You know how you go in, you get in the piece of real estate, and you improve, and then you flip it. You sell it. Flip it, right? Yeah, I understand what that. Okay, so you understand flipping houses. Yeah, I do. Okay, well, I flip pyramids. I go and I look for a ground floor pyramid where I can get at the very top of the tree. You know, you've always heard people that get in the top make all the big money. And then I make sure that the products are scientific, the owners have run companies, they know what they're doing, they're well capitalized, good manufacturers, quality. In other words, I don't just jump into anything stupid. I've got algorithms for picking the best kind of company. I find one early. I bring in all my friends and relatives and everybody who will listen to me at the very top. We make a fortune. Then when the company levels off in stability and hits a billion, we sell our organization and go find another pyramid to flip. I flip pyramids. Now, Jackie, let me tell you the truth. When I say that to the average – now, most people have pyramid objections or they think our industry is crazy. Whatever. When I say that to a person, most people say to me, wow, that's fascinating. You actually flip pyramids. Have you found any good ones lately? They want to know. I've not only taken all the objection out of the wind out of their sails, but I've also given them a chance to participate in what they've always known would make sense, and that's the ground floor of a deal. Boy, if I can get in the ground floor, it's like the people that used to say, I learned the best from Richard how to deal with the Amway objection. When people say, is this like Amway? I'd say, well, let me ask you a question. If we could turn back the clock, if I could wave a wand, turn back the clock to 1959 and get you in the first week of Amway, would you sign up knowing what you know? Oh, yeah. So in other words, you don't hate Amway. You're just mad you didn't get a shot at the ground floor. See, everybody wants to do one of these deals, but they want to get in at the right time, and they want to know that the people bringing them in have access to smart people who don't pick stupid companies. And so that's what I do. I just go out and talk to a lot of people, plant seeds, have fun.
Perfect. Well, Mark, how do we find out more about you? How does our audience access you?
Well, I'll tell you. It'd be better if they just access somebody in their upline who's in their company to really work with them on three-way calling and everything. What I always tell people is a lot of times people try to track me down because they've read my book or whatever, and I always love to recruit and work with people. I love people to be able to find me who are between companies and all that, but I always hate to use my influence to talk to persuade people to think they're going to somehow be better off with me on my front line. So what I would say to people, I mean, I'm very visible on Google. Anybody can Google Mark Yarnell, and you'll find out what I'm doing, where I'm at. But with this disclaimer, I would stay where you are and do the best you can until you've tracked upline in the company you're in and trusted your best leader at the top to coach you. You got no business changing companies because geographical cures usually don't work. But I'm all over the internet. You know, you can find me anywhere.
Very good. True sign of integrity. You're a leader of leaders, and I so appreciate you, and I so appreciate you taking some time to share with all of us today. So thank you so much, my friend. It's been a true honor and privilege for me.
Thank you, Jackie. The pleasure's all mine. Let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot.
Wow, truly some amazing good stuff. Well, here are some action steps that you can take now. First, decide where you fall on the impression management scale. I loved that term. I had never heard it before, and it's really powerful. Second, decide on a daily action plan that will take you where it is that you want to go. And finally, work on your listening and communication skills. The resources in Mark's books are all available. The links there will be in the show notes over at jackiealmer.com/066. And if you have questions for the podcast, you can ask those over at jackiealmer.com/questions. If this show's been helpful, I would really appreciate it if you would rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen. Just go to jackiealmer.com/iTunes, click to view it in iTunes, and you'll see the link to review. I would so love that, or rate it, whatever. It would mean a lot to me. And I know it can be a hassle, but if you could just take a few minutes to do that, I would so appreciate it. And then share the link with friends and team partners. And if you listen via Stitcher, you can just go to jackiealmer.com/Stitcher. I truly appreciate you, and I'll see you on the next podcast. I have a free gift for you over at profitinyourpjsnow.com. That's my report with 8 easy steps to create and build your dream business online. This is my nuts and bolts training on exactly how I sponsored over 1,700 people into my network marketing business and created a lifestyle business with my laptop and internet. You can also get more at my blog, JackieElmer.com, and be sure to connect with me on my Facebook page, facebook.com/streetsmartwealth, and I'll see you over on Twitter @JackieElmer. See you on the next show.